ESOL Home Tutoring has volunteered.
Welcome to Take It From Us with host Kent Johns. Real people, real voices, real lives. Discussing mental health, addiction and disability in the community. Your weekly window to the real world. Welcome to Take It From Us.
Barrett's life changed profoundly in 2012. A mismanaged medical condition led to sepsis, organ failure, and Corin was placed in an induced coma. 9 days later, when she woke, she was told that in order to save her life, doctors would have to amputate both her hands and legs. Corin is now a mentor, motivational speaker, and inspiration to many. So how did those events 12 years ago shape the person she is today? And what can we all learn of the power of the growth mindset? We need to ask her. Corin, how have you been?
I've been good, thank you. Yeah. Just enjoying the sun while we've got it.
Yeah. Are you someone that sort of looks at the weather all the time and your mood goes up and down with it? Are you like most of us?
Yeah, pretty much like that. I mean, I do enjoy the odd day where it's raining and you sort of feel like you don't have to rush around and do things and can get some stuff done at home. But I don't enjoy the heat, but I enjoy seeing the sun, blue sky. We get frosty mornings and then a beautiful day, so that's kind of my ideal.
here's a question for you. When you're on holiday, are you an active relaxer who needs to be doing things all of the time, or are you someone who's a bit more passive and will just sit down with a good book?
A bit of both, actually. I like the downtime, but I also like to do sort of adventure-based stuff and a little bit of adrenaline junkie stuff.
Right.
But I can't be on the go all the time. It just gets too tiring. And so sometimes my mind is like all for it and then my body's like, we're getting too old for this.
Right, okay. Have you always been an adrenaline junkie?
I've always liked things like motorsport and stuff like that. But, when I was gifted a bungee jump, I wasn't quite so keen. And then a skydive just took it to that next level. Part of me was also like, I have to do this because I need to prove, as a quad amputee that we can do anything. And so, but I didn't enjoy it.
I mean, you do have an amazing story that we're looking forward to hearing about. How has your, I guess it's, this will be the question that you've probably had to think about so many times, is to quantify and to describe how your life has profoundly changed in the last 12 years. Are you able to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, the biggest thing for me was when it all happened, I was, I was very sort of dark days and thinking the worst and feeling sorry for myself and why me. But I was quite lucky that I very quickly switched it into the mindset of, okay, it's happened. My legs and hands aren't going to grow back. So I need to sort of just move forward. And then I just kept setting myself the smallest of goals and just realising that I needed to get on with life. And I wanted to get out of hospital and I wanted to prove that I was okay and I wanted to go back to work and prove that I could still do my job. And for me it was, it changed a lot of things to do with my mindset. It also got me out of the you know, work, eat, sleep, repeat, mundane sort of life that I feel that I had sort of fallen into. Like, don't get me wrong, I loved my career and I loved socialising with my workmates and all that sort of thing, but I wasn't doing anything else and I wasn't experiencing anything else. And since then, like, I wouldn't turn it back to what it was, because I've just had so many opportunities and I've met so many amazing people and I've just been able to do things that I never possibly would have had the chance to do over the 12 years. And sometimes, yeah, it feels crazy to think that it's been 12 years, but then it sometimes feels like it was, you know, 2 years ago. And then other times it feels like it's just been my whole life. So, it was making that choice very early on to not let it define me, I think, was the biggest thing, sort of coming to that fork in the road and going, okay, which way am I going to go with this?
It sounds like you're extremely grateful for everything that you've got and that you wouldn't change a hell of a lot. Do you remember the first time you sat with that thought, my goodness, I'm actually doing well?
Yeah, I think it was in hospital still, and I think it was the like first time I did something like feed myself or was able to take myself to the bathroom or just all those firsts. And it was realizing, hey, the only person who's going to hold me back from anything is actually myself. So being told by the doctors, oh, you'll never be able to do that, or you won't be able to do that, or prepare yourself for the fact that you know, probably won't go back to work and you won't pipe again and you won't, all these things. But some of it's probably, you know, that reverse psychology. Because I remember one of my surgeons, I said to her, am I going to be able to type? Because, you know, I've got no fingers on my left hand and no arm on my right side. And she was like, oh no, you probably won't, you just, you know. And then, you know, 3 weeks later, I'm waiting in the waiting room to see her and I've got my iPad and I'm typing. And she comes out and she goes, I knew you'd type again. And I was like, oh, it's just, but you do think that they probably do that reverse.
Right. I was going to ask you, do you find many who are encouraging who say, look, you can put your mind to it, you will be able to achieve more things than you think you will be able to right now? Do you get near that?
Yeah, actually, I mean, no. It was a lot of Debbie Downers, you know, right, along the way, and it was kind of, you really have to push yourself and you just have to, you sort of have to think, no, I'm going to try. So I'm someone who's really big on not asking for help unless I actually need it. So I will try and do something for myself, you know, multiple times. And then, I mean, but there are things that I just absolutely cannot do. And that's totally okay. But it's coming to terms with those things that you need help with. And then those things that, I don't know if I need help with that because I haven't tried. So it's pushing yourself along, like, people say, oh, does Craig, my husband, do your makeup? And I'm like, God, no. I'd look like a clown, you know. And so you just have to, and they're like, but how do you do your eyeliner and how do you do this? And it's like, you just do it. And, yeah, and all that sort of stuff. It's just, it's just funny, people's misconceptions, I guess.
Right. Well, you probably know stuff that only you will ever know about how you get these things done.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And people are always curious and, you know, they ask sometimes, like, some people don't want to push the boundaries and, you know, go too personal, but I'm totally okay with that too, because if I can help someone else out there who isn't yet at a stage where they are doing these things for themselves, just by giving them some tips, you know, like, this is how I do it, doesn't mean that that's how you're going to do it, but I tried and this is the way that works for me. So that's why we've got things like the Quad Squad page, Facebook page, where we have quad amputees from all around the world and we just give each other advice and, you know, people come on and ask questions and every single person's at a different stage of their journey. So there's brand new quads on there, or I call myself one of the, you know, one of the old school ones because I'm 12 years down the track. But, yeah, it's I'm still learning things from other people too, so... Yeah.
Well, as someone who clearly is adopting and has adopted the growth mindset to your benefit, you will always probably be learning, won't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. But and because then I can then share that in ways as well, because I've got, you know, with my social media following and yeah, and it's only gonna help other people. And you don't have to be a quad amputee to do some of the things. I mean, some people have horrific arthritis and can't, you know, utilise their hands very well. So watching me crack an egg, you know, with an egg cracker, or do things in the kitchen. So I just need to do more of that. I think that's my sort of goal for this year is video myself doing everyday things just to help other people.
Take us back, if you would like to, take us back to 2012, and you weren't even in New Zealand.
When
you were basically given not much chance at life.
Mm. Yeah, so living my best life, working in Australia, everything was just rolling along. I was in a really high paid, amazing job, traveling heaps, you know, living life to the max. And then mum passing away from bowel cancer very quickly. So she was only 52. And then experiencing issues myself sort of just threw me into this chaotic world of suddenly I've been diagnosed with a condition that I'd never heard of, ulcerative colitis. I didn't even get a chance to manage that, you know, like I'm looking up, like, what does that mean? Do I have to eat certain foods? Do I have to take medication? Because all of a sudden I'm in hospital and fighting for my life and wake up in a completely different hospital. No idea where I am, what's happened, and unable to speak or move. Yeah, so it was a pretty trying time of what does this mean for life going forward? You know, I told Craig to leave because I was like, he doesn't want to hang around for what? I mean, what's to come from here? He's like, why would I leave? You were high maintenance before, now you've just upped the bar. So, yeah, he's good like that. He uses humour a lot, inappropriate as it is sometimes. But, yeah, and then, you know, I was like, am I still going to have a job? Because I was very career orientated and just all these things just flying through your head. Am I ever going to get out of here? You know, in the first place, because you just feel so helpless. You know, and then they come in and say, we're going to amputate your legs on Thursday. And in the back of my mind, I was like, nah, that's fine. I'll walk again one day. There's, you know, technology out there. I've seen it. It was my hands that I probably was the hardest news.
Right.
And because they didn't know how much they were going to amputate until they got in there, I couldn't really prepare myself, whereas with my legs it was a little bit more sort of, what's the word? I won't say cut and dry, but yeah, a little bit more obvious. Yeah.
And so you had 25 surgeries. When was the most recent one?
So the 25 surgeries was all in the 7 months that I was in hospital.
Right.
I've since had... gosh, 1, 2, 3, probably 5. So yeah, probably I'm probably up around 30 surgeries since the start. But two of those surgeries were absolutely for my quality of life. And one was reversing the ileostomy bag that I was originally given before I even went into an induced coma. Obviously, not having two hands, very difficult to manage a bag on you. So I was very lucky that an amazing surgeon in Brisbane took a chance. When I'd been told multiple times to deal with it, you're always going to have it, you've got too much damage in there, we will never be able to reverse it, he took a chance. He said, I need to try for your quality of life. So that reversal went through, and touch wood, still going well today. So that was 2014. And then the other surgery was my osseointegration on my legs. So that's where they implant titanium rods into both legs. And that just gave me back independence.
Right.
It comes with its cons, like I can't swim in public pools and you can't run. And, well, someone was chasing me, I would run. But
public pools are gross anyway.
Oh, exactly.
Overrated.
Yeah. And I get infections and things like that and have pain, but the absolute positive sides of it far outweigh all of that. And so, just being able to click in and out of my legs and stand and walk more naturally and travel with shower legs and just, yeah, not having to worry about all of that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
So it was like an inflammatory immune disorder to start with. And yeah, before you know it, you're having to wrap your head around the fact that I'm about to lose my legs, I'm about to lose my arms and my hands, mm-hmm, and I've got no idea what impact this is going to have on my life other than it's going to turn it upside down.
Yeah.
And it happened so quick. How did you get your head around that?
It took me a while to sort of really understand the full extent of it. I think, initially I was very heavily medicated, so I had short-term memory loss and I wouldn't even remember every day having to be told, you're in the hospital, this is what's happened, stop thinking that you've been kidnapped, and the, you know, all the hallucinations and horrible things that were going through my head. And then I couldn't speak for about 3 weeks, which was really difficult. But, you do get a lot of, you, every night you're lying there, you get a lot of time to think. So when your brain capacity actually does come back on board, I think the pivotal moment for me was my boss coming in and telling me that my job was waiting for me. And I think that just gave me that instant sense of I'm actually going to be okay. And it was that normalcy and just the fact that I had something to strive for. Like, I had life to strive for, obviously, but also I realised very early on that I'd survived something that I probably shouldn't have. And so obviously there was a reason for that. And it just wasn't my time. And so I needed to shift it from what can I no longer do to what can I still do and what can I do going forward, and just constantly looking forward and not back. But don't get me wrong, like I always say to people, like I said to before, it's not all puppy dogs and rainbows. I don't just wake up every day and think, woo, life's awesome and let's get on with the day. There are days where I have poor me moments, which I've learned to embrace over the years. I think it's important to embrace those moments. I think sometimes we need to cry, or sometimes we need to yell, or, you know, vent or swear or do whatever it is that we need to do, pick up a book, have a read, go for a walk, just not adult, you know, maybe we're not getting out of my pyjamas today. But I've learnt, embrace it for the day, but don't let it consume you. So tomorrow you have to get out of bed and actually get up and get on.
Yeah, let tomorrow do its job.
Yeah. Absolutely. So today you can be all the things that you need to be, but tomorrow is going to be a new day, and yeah, it's going to be a good day. So yeah, that's probably my biggest advice to myself and to everyone else that I, yeah, try to.
I made a deal with myself about 4.5 years ago after the lockdown stuff. And I said, every day you have to do at least one little thing for yourself. And if that's all you do, when you get to the end of the day, you can say, hey, at least I did that. And I've led bit like you with the growth mindset, in that if you can lean into doing little things and acknowledging them. And then when you've got lots of energy and when you're up and you're feeling great and life's good and it's amazing how much more you can power through. But I think a lot of the time, don't you think we find ourselves trying to power through slop and mud when maybe the best thing for ourselves is just to take a stop and to take a mental rest and then gather ourselves and go again. And I guess you've become really, really adept at that and knowing your cues quite well.
Yeah, definitely. You sort of realise it's haven't had enough sleep, or I'm mentally drained, or I'm pushing myself. I'm really good. My husband's very straight up with, don't you think you're doing too much? Because we've got a shared calendar, and so he'll see me, you know, flicking around from place to place, and I'll get asked at the start of the week, oh, have you got time to catch up for a coffee this week? And I'll go through and it's like, yep, I've got a 2-hour gap there. Whereas I'm slowly learning that actually leave that 2-hour gap, because you might need it after the fact that you've just done a speaking event at a school, or, need some downtime. You don't want to be rushing from place to place. So saying to someone, I'm not available this week, but next Tuesday I'm good. And it is totally fine. It's stop thinking that you're going to miss out on something if you say no, but knowing, that you actually have the ability to push it out and just say, look, this week's not good for me, but in the next couple of weeks, what's your availability? So let's lock something in.
Public speaking takes a lot of energy out of people. How do you find it?
It does, yeah. And again, I think I pushed myself. So in the last couple of years, obviously after COVID, everyone's wanting to sort of rebook, and everyone was contacting me saying, we've got a new date, are you available? And I'd look at it and be like, yes, I am, and book it in. But I wasn't looking at what I was doing around it. And suddenly, all of a sudden, like one 11-day period, I had 7 events.
Wow.
And I thought, I can't do this. So I did it. But afterwards, I vowed that I wouldn't do that again, because you can't sustain it. I was actually physically and mentally exhausted after that, and because it involved travel too, so I was, it wasn't just all local. I was flying to Wellington and then Christchurch and then back up to Hawke's Bay for an event and then driving to Rotorua for a conference and then back, and so now I've learnt to space them out, and where I can, obviously that doesn't always happen, but sometimes you just have to say no too.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't like doing. I'm always a yes person, but you do have to every now and then. If it's not going to serve you, and you're not going to have the energy to put into the presentation, you're only going to let down your audience.
How are you received when you speak?
Pretty well. So I forget sometimes that the story can have such a huge impact on people, and because I've told it so many times, and often I feel like I'm telling the story on behalf of someone else, because people will say, how do I feel? Because I show a video and it's kind of my journey, and people will ask, how do you feel when you look at that? And it's almost like I'm looking at someone else's story, because it feels like I'm so detached from that now. From those times of, when laying in the hospital bed and my hands and feet been, you know, black before they got amputated and all that sort of stuff. But it's always the people that come up to me afterwards and say, I'll never complain about having arthritis ever again. Or, you know, like, I'll stop complaining about my sore back. Or, and it's like, well, I don't want you to stop complaining about your sore back, because pain is pain. And we all, you know, deal with it in different ways. What I want is for you just to realise that things are going to happen in life, but it's how we respond to it. So I always use that quote, you know, life is 10% what happens, 90% how we respond, because that's how I believe I live my life. And I just want other people to sort of sit back and go, okay, this is a blip in the radar, you know, curve in the road. Life's not linear. Like, you know, we've got things are going to happen to us, but we just have to respond to it in the right way.
Well, so you're giving people, you're giving the rest of us perspective.
And that's the biggest thing. Perspective and the ability to be grateful. Like, just to be grateful for what you've got. Because it can be the simplest of things. I'm grateful I've got elbows and knees. Doesn't sound like much, but when I know quad amputees out there who lost their legs and arms very high up, you know, they've their quality of life is so different to mine. So it's just, yeah, gratitude and perspective, absolutely.
What are you most grateful for?
That I'm still here. And that I actually have the ability to change lives, I think, is the biggest thing. Impact people with my talks and mentoring, and just that I still have the energy and the ability to volunteer for all the organisations that I am part of and to try and make an impact. Be the voice, because some people don't have one. They might go through something like this and come out the other side and really just not have the voice or the courage or the strength to pull themselves through. But I just, this is obviously the path that I was meant to walk. And so I'm embracing it and just,
Can you tell us one specific story of someone who you've had a positive impact on?
Probably a young girl who had amputations when she was really young, but had never really overcome the trauma of that. And she was hiding herself away. You know, so I've mentored her and visited her a few times, and I think she sent me a message just to say, like, I left the first time I met her, and I was so worried that I had just not done the right thing, because she'd cried and she hadn't really opened up and all these sorts of things. And I thought, oh, did I say the wrong thing or did I do the wrong thing? And then she messaged me and she just said, thank you. I've never met someone who just knows. And yeah, like, just that just absolutely was the reward for doing what I do. Just, and then the next time I saw her, she had her hair off her face, she was standing tall, she was opening up to me, and she said, I'm wearing shoes. And it was the first time in 15 years that she'd actually worn proper shoes instead of like a prosthetic device on the bottom. And it just made all the difference. So, And she's just one. I mean, I've spoken in schools and received messages from kids afterwards privately on social media just saying, you know, I was in a pretty dark space and you've pulled me out of it and thank you. And they keep in contact till this day and Yeah. So that's why I do what I do.
I imagine too, for you, you'll set yourself little goals of things that you want to achieve, and you probably won't get there straight away, and there'll be you'll have little bumps and bruises along the way, and there'll be hurdles, and there might even be self-doubt about whether you can achieve what it is that you really want to achieve. How are you able to deal with the setbacks and the disappointment in the moment?
Yeah, imposter syndrome is big.
Really?
Yeah, it's something that I'm trying to work through at the moment because I want to write a book, but I'm a perfectionist. So then I want the book to be perfect. So then it sells. And then what if it doesn't sell? And what if I make a fool of myself? And then I want to do a TED talk, but it's like, what if I never get there? Or what if they don't think that I'm good enough? And what if I can't squeeze my story into 15 minutes or whatever it is that they give you, 17 minutes or something? So there's always the what if, what if, what if. But I've just started working with like a business mentor, life coach, who's just trying to knock all of that stuff out and just being true to myself. And she says, like, you know, the power of honesty and humor and all of that, like, utilize the skills that you've got and just get it out there. And it's like sending my first newsletter to my email database. It's like, oh, I want it to be, you know, like, shouldn't it be the logo's in the right place and there's a photo and then there's the text and everything's got to be, you know, in the right place. But she's like, no, just send a damn email and be honest and say, I've been fretting over this email for months and now I'm finally sending it.
That's a great way to start.
Yeah, and just, she said, just send it, be honest, and people will be like, they'll appreciate the honesty, and it's you. You're not trying to be something that you're not.
Yeah, so. And the advice that I've heard from others too is exactly the same. Put a video out there. Put a message out there. Don't worry. Yeah. There's so many of us probably don't go and do the things that we want to be doing or should be doing because we're worried about exactly what you talk about, making it perfect, looking credible, making sure that we feel valued before we even do anything. All of these things, rather than just actually putting the first one out there and acknowledging, hey, the first one will be a bit ropey. It probably won't be my best work, but I will get there and at least I've done something. It makes you wonder how many people don't actually even start a project, let alone finish one.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's always the, oh, it's not quite ready, or, oh, I'm not this, or, oh, and yeah. So just, yeah, you're right. Just, we've just got to do it. And the first one, like you say, the first one might be an absolute flop, but you can only laugh about it and say, okay, so let's hope this one's better than the last one because I only got, you know, 3 likes or something.
Oh, those are only vanity metrics too.
Exactly.
And we get so wound up about the number of likes and the number of comments and all of the rest of it. But for someone like you, I'm sure, there would be so many people who you are impacting who you'll never hear from. You'll never even know that they're out there. You won't even, I mean, there'll be people listening to this right now who you will never hear from, but you've made a positive impact on their lives just for them listening into your story.
Yeah.
And that's way more powerful than 43 likes and 6 likes. Comments.
Exactly. Absolutely it is. Yeah.
So there's the book to look forward to. There's the TED Talk, which I can't wait to hear about. You've got all these great things on the go, which you will do.
Yeah.
What else do you hope for yourself? What are your best hopes for yourself?
I guess it's just to get the message out there and ideally go international and just, you know, I mean, I haven't even conquered New Zealand, so I've got there's so many businesses out there that, you know, initially I sort of thought, oh, have I exhausted the market? But it's like, well, no, I haven't, you know, Maybe little old Hawke's Bay, probably sick of seeing me around the place, but there's, you know, Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, she's, I mean, the whole country, and then, you know, Australia, and and even if it's virtual, I mean, to have a Zoom call is still just has an impact. I don't enjoy it as much, obviously, standing in front of people is so much better than staring at a screen of faces, especially when they're all on mute and I'm telling jokes and no one's laughing and I'm like, oh, tough crowd.
It's a tough crowd. You know?
But it's still a way of getting the message out there. And, so to be able to offer one-on-one mentoring and workshops and things is definitely my my goal for this year.
Is it okay if I ask about your family and friends?
Yeah, sure.
Who's have most of them stuck with you during this journey? And the reason why I ask is because I know someone who was confined to a wheelchair, and he said to me the one thing that really surprised him was that some of his mates dropped away. And yeah. And I think it was because they felt awkward, they felt uncomfortable, but he lost some mates and was then okay with that. How have you found your friendship group and your family and the way that they've been there for you or maybe haven't been in that time?
Yeah, absolutely. So early days, there was huge change in the dynamics of my friendship group, particularly. So, you know, a couple of my best friends at the time before I got sick, or even while I was in hospital, but then just sort of disappeared. And initially it hurt because you're kind of like, you know, I need you now more than ever. But then you also realise, well, it's probably a reflection of them as well. Like, they don't know how to cope. Yes, things are different now. We're not rushing out after work, going to the pub for drinks like we used to. You know, initially when I was in my wheelchair, it was a little more difficult to invite me to certain places because of accessibility, all those certain sorts of things. But I think it also opened up for other friendships and people that have come into my life since, and the strength in that. And, you know, I've since rebuilt some friendships with people from the past, but yeah, I've just, yeah, the people that have come in since and that I would never have met, like, if I wouldn't have met a huge group of my friends now since I've moved back to Hawke's Bay, but also because I network so much, you know, I've got a really huge support network, and I think that's important as well. Family, well, we weren't close before, so, I mean, yeah, still, we're still pretty much the same before and after, yeah.
And you haven't been able to shake Craig by the sounds of it?
Nah, I tried to get rid of him and he wouldn't go anywhere.
How's your relationship with him? How's that been for the last few years?
Yeah, good. I think initially it was really difficult because it was a very Kira versus Kerry, you know. Those first couple of years getting out of hospital were hard on both of us. But we also were a good team, and we set a lot of things in place very early on to give me back independence, because then that only flows onto him having independence as well. So him not having to worry about leaving me at home, you know, on my own for a few hours a day, to now me travelling on my own. So we've worked towards things like regaining my ability to drive, do all the, you know, personal care, everything that I need to be able to do to so that he can step away from that role. I mean, he still does a lot for me, and but we're in quite a good routine now where it's like, you know, he'll help me get organised in the morning, and then he's gone off to work for, you know, for the day, and he knows that I've got a bunch of things to do. So it can be simple things like changing my earrings or changing my shoes, that things that I can't do for myself. But the rest of it, he knows I'm totally fine. And I've also got a really good support network around here, so he can still go away for the weekends or, and still do the things that he loves to do, you know, which is important because you still have to have your own life.
You've got your own life, but you're part of a great team.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah. And when people say, oh, you're so lucky that he didn't leave, it's like, no. He's lucky that I'm the way I am too, because it could have gone the other way and I could have just said, F the world, I'm not getting on with my life. And where would we be today? We wouldn't be here. He's probably wouldn't have stuck around, because he doesn't want to be with someone who's like that. And so I had to be positive and I had to be goal-orientated and determined and everything to move forward for the benefit of both of us. So, yes, some days I think I'm lucky that he's stuck around. You know, other days he can be a pain in the butt, but can't everyone? You know?
Yeah.
Where would you be without, you know, a bit of you know, humour and, yeah, and just, yeah, having common goals, common interests, but also independence is key.
Yeah, and you're leaning into humour quite a lot, and I bet you that's been a tonic for you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, for both of us. I mean, it was absolutely his coping strategy. And for me, I use it a lot in my presentations, and it's because I don't want there to be that, oh, poor her feeling. I want people to come away feeling happy and positive and uplifted and know that I'm okay.
You've uplifted us, Corin. You're a real inspiration, and we wish you nothing but the very best.
Thank you. No, it's been amazing. Thanks very much.
Take It From Us is produced by Karen Murphy. Our sound engineer is Paul Hannon at Planet FM and is hosted by me, Kent Johns. For more on Corin's inspirational story, visit her website, corin.co.nz. That's Corin with a K. She'd love to hear from you.
You've been listening to Take It From Us with host Kent Johns, produced by Karen Murphy, executive producer Andrew Dewhurst, made with the real stories and voices from our community. And for that, we thank you. For more information on anything you've heard on today's show, or for direction on where to seek further advice or assistance, visit our Facebook page, Take It From Us.
happy. I'm poor, but I'm kind. I'm short, but I'm healthy, yeah. I'm high, but I'm grounded. I'm sane, but I'm overwhelmed. I'm lost, but I'm hopeful, baby. And what it all comes down to is that everything's gonna be fine, fine, fine. 'Cause I've got one hand in my pocket and the other one is giving a high five. I feel drunk, but I'm sober.
It's no secret that wear what garters, smelling like their mothers, whose husbands and fathers alike drink black beer in the same public houses, smelling of smoke and strong whiskey. Mammies and daddies and skipping ropes, lectures from priests, living in hope. They've not mistaken the brand of their coats, paid for by their spiritual teachings. A busy year this, the streets running red. How many sent to a nuptial bed? And how many sent home to a winter of graves? And how many waiting for the slaughter? The fortune, their saints and their scholars to see. Oh, the holy ground. Far away hills, ain't as green as they once used to be. Again, and we cannot forget brothers and sisters and all that was said. So practice your pipes, stand proud in the wet, for the eyes of the world are upon you. God in his mercy has given us men to lead us to peace, but they can't bring an end to the profits that pay off the lease of the land. We still send them over the water. 17 years, Kelly is a man who stands on the street with a gun in his hands. He's protecting the pipers that play in the band while the enemy waits with an army. Oh, the holy ground. Gave me La Falcia, their saints and their scholars to see. And as green as they once used to be. Deal a heron, suckle the empire. Deal a heron, suffer the loss. At the green to the blue, while the media feeds on the blood and the pain and the hatred. Walks home on the colourless night, and the organisation has blinded his sight. His wife and his kids are sleeping tonight in the arms of sweet Jesus and Mary.